Our topic today is Expressions of Universalism. I hope that all of you personally experienced one such expression of universalism just a moment ago when we sang, "We'll Build a World," instead of just, "We'll Build a Land." Universalism means including everyone. It means not limiting our empathy to only those who live in our own country. In fact, that limited nationalistic viewpoint is exactly one of the main enemies of universalism, not only in our country, but in most of the countries of the world. Such a limited nationalistic viewpoint is a major factor in the wars of the past centuries. As a German, I must be ready to go to war against France and Britain and Russia. As an American, I must be ready to go to war against Japan and Germany and Russia and maybe China in the future, and so on. Fortunately, during the last 60 years, we are beginning to see some movement toward a more universalistic viewpoint, with the creation, for example, of the European Union and the African Union. But those efforts are slow and still could fail. Nationalism is still a very strong cultural force in this country and in almost all other countries. Regardless of the success or failure of the integration of some countries into regional federations, many individuals, as individuals, are adopting a more universalist point of view. They are thinking of themselves as citizens of a world community and not just citizens of this or that country, as earthlings and not just Americans or Germans or Chinese or whatever other nationality. This universalism has been advanced by viewing photos of the Earth from space, by more international travel, by people marrying across national borders, including in this church, by the internet, and so on. In fact, I think that an important feature of the 21st century is that humanity is moving from an internationalistic viewpoint, reflected in maps and globes where the 200 countries are pictured in different colors, to a more universal global viewpoint, symbolized by that photo of Earth from space, where there are no national boundaries to be seen. The change is slow, but at this time, less than 12 and a half years of the 21st century have passed. There are still 87 and a half years left in this movement from internationalism to globalism in the 21st century. But even the expression, "We'll build a land," already shows some universalism, doesn't it? Our country, the United States of America, is a federation composed of 50 states, which have considerable differences. Our creation of this very large national federation in the year 1787 to 1789 was itself a giant and significant step toward more universalism. We are all U.S. citizens. Yet we know that New Hampshire is different from Georgia, that Texas is different from California, and that Alaska is different from Hawaii. It does not sound at all strange to hear someone say, "That doesn't convince me, I'm from Missouri." Nevertheless, we all feel the expression of universalism in our land when we sing the Star Spangled Banner, or America the Beautiful, or This Land is My Land. The creation of our national federation, the United States of America, is a beautiful example which shows that we can have universalism without uniformity, and that we can have differences but still have unity. Our national federation, as well as other national federations, provide a model of what we need as an expression of universalism at the global level. We need a world federation over the national governments of the world, just as there is our national federation over the states of the United States and the provinces of Canada and the cantons of Switzerland. The way to deal with this problem of getting unity with diversity is to create a federation, and we need to do it at the global level. We can hope that eventually the establishment of a federal system of government at the world level will put an end to global anarchy and wars, to wasteful military spending, and the building of ever more destructive weapons. As we have already done with regard to the situation within our country, we did have that civil war, but it's behind us now. Just as we have created the necessary political and judicial means for resolving conflict without wars and violence among the states in our country, so we can create the political and judicial means for resolving conflicts without wars and violence among the countries in our world. We already have the model in many different countries. We need to extend it to the global level. We can have an expression of universalism which extends to the whole world, just as in our country, we have already implemented an expression of universalism which includes our very diverse states. Another area where we experience an expression of universalism is when others speak or otherwise communicate with us in our language, as in letters or email messages. The fact that English is a common language of most Americans helps sustain the unity within our country. And the lack of a common language in lands such as Canada and Belgium and Romania tends to undermine the unity of those and other countries. So let's think about this at the global level. What is the situation with regard to language in the global community? Because of the influence of the former British Empire and the present influence of the United States, there's no doubt that English is a dominant language in international communication, even though it is the first language of less than 6% of the world's people. That means that 94% of the people in the world must learn English as a second or third or fourth language. And it's not the easiest language to learn. We need to be aware of the deep resentment that this unfair situation causes among non-English speakers. such as Arabs and Italians and Russians and most of the people of Latin America and Asia. Some people ask, why do they hate us so? Part of it is this resentment. Among Europeans, there's a popular joke that goes like this. What do you call a person who uses three languages? Trilingual. What do you call a person who uses two languages? Bilingual. What do you call a person who can use only one language? An American. For trivia buffs, a somewhat related, a different question, but related question is, what are the only three countries in the world that don't use the metric system? Did you know that? There's only three countries in the whole world that don't use it. And what are they? Libya, Myanmar, or Burma, and the United States of America. Even though our Congress has passed several laws making the metric system the legal system in the United States. But we're still behind and out of step with the rest of the world. But the problem of fairness related to universalism in language is raised not just with the use of English. If any national language were to be used as a language for the whole world community, the native speakers of that language will have an unfair advantage over all the others. A sense of justice requires that the language for the global community should not be any national language. Even Mandarin Chinese, with the largest number of native speakers, is the first language of only about 15% of the world's population. So if Chinese were the global language, still 85% of the world's population would need to learn it as a second or third or fourth language. Most Americans do not realize that in the world as a whole, there are more native speakers of both Chinese and Spanish than of English, and that in the near future, Hindi will surpass English, and English will be in fourth place. And if we look at the world as a whole, there are 22 languages in the world spoken by at least 50 million people. 22 languages. So much for multilingualism. Just learn a bunch of different languages. And even then, would you be learning the same other languages? Even if you've got two people, each of whom speak four languages, do they still have a common language? So what is the appropriate expression of universalism with regard to a common language for the global community? One which at the same time will encourage rather than end the continued use of national and ethnic languages within the national and ethnic communities. How to have a universal language without destroying the other languages. The obvious universalist solution, which even children can discern, is for everyone in the world to learn a common global language, which is no one's national language, but which is designed to be easy to learn regardless of your native language. Unfortunately, many people are unaware that just such a language has already been designed and is being used. It is called Esperanto. It was developed by a Polish physician named Ludwig Lazarus Zamenhof. He presented it to the world 125 years ago, in 1887. It is easy to learn because it is totally phonetic. It has 28 letters in the alphabet and each letter has one and only one sound. There are only a few rules to follow, and there are never any exceptions to these rules. There are no genders to learn, as in many European languages. Esperanto has an ingenious word-building system which allows one's vocabulary to grow very rapidly. I personally believe that Esperanto is one of humanity's greatest inventions, but which unfortunately is not yet being widely used. Esperanto is essentially a streamlined, modernized Latin. That means that some vocabulary will be familiar to anyone who knows a European language. Consequently, the language is easier for Europeans to learn than for others, in Asia, for example. But even non-Europeans find Esperanto much easier to learn than national languages, such as English, French, Spanish, or German. As many of you know, both Jerry Johnson and I are Esperantists. Because of Esperanto, I have personal friends all over the world. Some have even invited me to stay overnight in their homes, in France and Brazil and China and Romania. Next month, an Esperanto friend from China will be coming to visit me. She will come with me to church on July 1st. She's from Shanghai and helped me several times when I was visiting China. Esperantists can communicate with each other without first learning the more difficult national languages. I've been to China 4 times. I'll be going another time this coming July. I do not know Chinese. So how do I do it? My Esperanto friends meet me at the airport, meet me at the train stations, accompany me, and that's how that will happen when they come and visit us. Besides, we also feel that we are part of an evolving universal community. When I go to China, when I go to France, and I speak with people in Esperanto, it's a lot different than if I speak to them in English, where I have the advantage of using my native language. It's just not the same. I believe that all people, and especially English-speaking people, have an ethical obligation to learn and encourage their children and grandchildren to learn Esperanto as the appropriate language of the new universal community, global community, which is coming into existence. They and you can learn it on your computers at http://lernu, which is the Esperanto word for learn, .net. Starting with 35 different languages, you can learn Esperanto on that website. Or you can just Google on Esperanto and find it. In fact, I think it would be a wonderful idea to teach Esperanto in our UU religious education program so that our English-speaking children are encouraged to think globally and get prepared to participate in the global community rather than being spoiled kids in a world dominated by the use of English. They will then be able to feel that they are part of a global community in a way that those who do not use Esperanto cannot. I know there are people going all over the world using English, and I'm sure it's not the same kind of experience that I have when I go and meet other people and communicate with them in Esperanto. They know I could use English, but I don't. I use Esperanto. And that makes a big difference to them. Religion is a third area where an expression of universalism is desirable. the very name of our religious organization, the Unitarian Universalist Association, UUA, indicates that we have some kind of connection with universalism. Originally, the basic idea of the Christian Universalists was that God was too good to condemn anyone to an everlasting hell. Thus, all people would ultimately be saved. That was the belief of the Universalists. Universalists gradually came to realize that it was not just one doctrine about some people being eternally damned that they opposed. One should use compassion in one's human interactions and reason in one's thinking about all kinds of religious issues. Universalists tended to be more inclusive and empathetic with the poor and neglected than most religious groups. They were among the first to ordain women and black clergy. Nevertheless, when we address the issue of universalism in religion, we need to realize that there are two very different and opposing ideals, both of which can use this word universal. One meaning of universal is that all people should believe the same doctrines. Some beliefs in this viewpoint are considered to be universal in the sense that they are doctrines that are to be believed by everyone at all times and in all places. This is the meaning of the word Catholic. The word Catholic comes from two Greek words which mean with reference to all or throughout the whole or universal. Thus, the Catholic Church views itself as the infallible universal church which has the one truth for all time and for all persons. Those who do not accept these beliefs are firmly excluded from this kind of so-called universal church. The other kind of universalism in religion, the kind which this church supports, puts the emphasis on inclusiveness. No one is excluded. There's no creed which everyone must say that they believe, whether they do or not. Freedom of belief and tolerance for diversity is central. No one is infallible. And it may even be that there's no one truth that holds for all times and all places. Each of us is free to seek the truth in his or her own way. We can all grow toward a better understanding as we gain new knowledge and have new experiences and become aware of new arguments. We can all grow in compassion and empathy and inclusiveness. This is the true expression of universalism in religion. Everyone is welcome. Like this congregation is a welcoming congregation. Everyone is welcome. Even atheists and agnostics and skeptics and gays and lesbians and so on, no one is excluded. Can we, in this religious community, bring these three expressions of universalism together? Looking at the matter of religious expression first, it seems that any religion that dogmatically insists that it has some truth which everyone else must accept is not really universalistic. Universalism in religion means tolerance and not excluding anyone, and a readiness to continue considering various religious, moral, and philosophical viewpoints. With regard to moving beyond a narrow nationalism to a more global universalistic view, I think that in the last few years, UUs have done rather well. In 1995, we moved beyond a purely British North American outlook to a more internationalist outlook by establishing our International Council of Unitarians and Universalists, ICUU. But we are still far from adopting a really global point of view. We now realize that some of our UU literature and hymnals should be available in Spanish and other national languages besides Hungarian and English, and I mention Hungarian because that's Transylvania, where the Unitarians in Europe are centered. But so far, we are still thinking internationally in terms of national languages and national UU organizations rather than thinking globally. For example, our Global Unitarian Universalist Esperanto Network was not allowed to become a full-fledged member of the ICUU because we were not a national organization. We thus were only allowed to become an associate member. Why? Because the ICUU is still international in its basic structure rather than global. On the matter of universalism with regard to language, I hope that our UU denomination will be able to move beyond just English and other national languages to a global point of view where our members, especially young people in our religious education programs, are encouraged to think globally and to use Esperanto. It would truly make our religion more universalist if everyone at our international UU meetings could communicate with each other in Esperanto rather than just English, which is the present situation. Universalism is a worthy goal. Our religious community has already made a great deal of progress, especially compared to most other religious communities. We continue to move forward, but we're definitely not there yet.